Welcome underground. In this episode, we discuss my co-host's recent decision to stop using a smartphone. Instead, he carries around a Nokia burner phone designed for drug dealers that can only text and make calls. This is part manifesto and part anthropology. Why has he done this? What is it like? We'll find out over the next hour. Enjoy.
You've taken the plunge after years of railing against smartphones.
And, I actually
the problems they cause.
Yeah, I actually haven't. Sorry to interrupt your intro immediately, but I haven't actually spent years railing against them. I don't think. I think it's actually a relatively new thing with me to rail against them, which is something that we could. But sorry.
Two years ago, you said you would ban them, and you acknowledged that there were upsides, but the damage they were doing to teenage girls that you were seeing firsthand was worth just destroying them.
Yeah, I suppose that actually I forgot that that was... there's the classic case of growing old, where 2 years ago doesn't feel that long ago. But actually, yeah, you're right. It is. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah. But you finally followed through to see what what life is like without them. So yeah, for the benefit of our listeners, has bought a burner phone.
Yeah, and it really is a drug dealer's phone as well, because it has the option for two SIMs. And it's not clear why a £25 phone would have the option for two SIM cards.
Yeah.
If it's not for drug dealing.
Yeah, that's a lot of features.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, who is the market? Because not many people, you know, you're a trailblazer.
Yeah. And, well, the market is drug dealers, I think, because I can't explain how else anybody would buy this particular phone. I really, really did go for the bottom of the barrel in terms of... it is the cheapest phone that... the sort of zombie version of Nokia sells, which is HMD owns the license for producing Nokia phones. Now, it's not actually Nokia, but anyway, this is the cheapest phone.
It is a Nokia design?
It's got the word Nokia on it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It's £25. It's terrible. It's actually terrible. This phone.
Because I mean, in a way that's worse than the phones you grew up with.
It's much worse than the phones that they were sort of optimized quite good sort of brick phones, you know, because they were around for a good few years being optimized. And I remember they were very intuitive and very friendly, user-friendly. This is actually just shockingly poor. That's a separate issue from it from it not being a smartphone, if that makes sense.
We should focus on the fact that this is a non-smartphone.
Yes.
Yeah. That you're using day-to-day now.
Yeah.
When you leave the house, you take that.
Yeah, and the reason I actually went for the cheapest one is because I thought, well, there's no point, because you can very quickly get sucked into going towards, you know, sort of a £100 phone that still does WhatsApp and Google Maps and all of that kind of thing. And then I thought, well, if I'm going to do this, I want to kind of go, you know, all out, you know, not just get a bad smartphone, but get a proper dumb phone, like the dumbest phone you can possibly get, and then see... you know, it sort of calibrate from there. That was my thinking. And that way it's the smallest sort of financial investment. It gives you the true flavor of what I'm trying to achieve and gives you the most information in the speediest way. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. And I guess the answer until recently would have been buying an old phone. You know, probably buy a Motorola Razr or a Nokia... what were they called, 3310s or whatever they were.
Yeah, yeah.
But as I understand it, they've turned off the 2G and even 3G signals now in the UK, so it wouldn't work.
Sad times. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So you have to buy a new one that works on 4G whilst actively rejecting everything that 4G brings with it.
Yes, exactly. And a fascinating detail, you know, I phoned up Vodafone, who are my provider, other providers are available, and I said, can you give me a SIM deal with no data? I just need calls and texts. Just unlimited calls and texts, no data. And I've never heard an operator on the other end of the line be so confused as to what was happening. He kind of said, sorry, what? He's like... no, we can do, you know, we can do like sort of, you know, do you want 5 gig of data? 5 gig? I was like, no, I don't want any data because my phone won't do any data. And he genuinely didn't know what I was talking about. He's like, oh, a 2 gig then? Do you want just 2 gig? It's the lowest gig we do. So you can't get a SIM from Vodafone that has no data on it.
So you have a 4G phone and are paying for data?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I'm not paying very much. It's £6 a month, but for 2 gigabytes of data. And that's on GIFGAF, and that was the lowest I could find by doing a general internet search. As far as I can tell, and please do write in and correct me, I don't think you can get a monthly payment SIM without some data, which is fascinating.
That's
isn't
it? Suspicious. It's a conspiracy.
Is it? Yeah, well, yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah.
The man wants you consuming data.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, of course, you could do it pay as you go, I assume. But I'm not quite there yet.
Go full drug dealer.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's an interesting detail. Sorry.
That's a good detail. Mm. But I guess the important detail is why you did this. Why did you do this?
Why did I do this? Well, because as you alluded to, I have a job where I work with young people every day, and I suppose that makes one think about phones in a slightly different way, because you see, I mean, it's right in front of you. You see every single day the sort of harm and damage they do. So that's one. I think that's what really started me off thinking about this critically, and I think that led to me being sort of critically reflective of my own relationship with a smartphone. And a few things. I concluded that it was wasting my time and that it was affecting my mood. You know, I don't want to talk about like mental health, because I think mental health is a useful concept, like that as with all useful concepts, has become somewhat overused. So I think it's best to think about mood in my case. And it was affecting my mood negatively when I was using it, I noticed.
How so?
Well, first of all, is the sense of wasting time, as I've just mentioned. Every time So once I had wasted time on it, that would affect my mood negatively for obvious reasons.
Oh, good. You're angry with yourself for having wasted time.
Yeah. So, yes, it's a sort of bleak feeling of thinking, gosh, that was half an hour that I'm not going to get back, and I was just sort of scrolling through God knows what.
And one day you'll die.
Yeah, and a very bleak feeling.
Yeah.
And then I noticed that being kind of tethered to this kind of information stream and being sort of sucked into it, feeling a sort of vague anxiety when I wasn't consuming it, and also, you know, you read something on the news, it feeds you something and it sort of winds you up, or it upsets you, or it makes you anxious, or, you know, something like that. All very mild. Obviously, I'm not there sort of weeping when reading sort of, you know, the Google feed of news or whatever. But it's just that kind of aggregation of minor negative little things that adds up over time. And you notice that, well, I noticed that, you know, the more time I spent on it, the generally the worse my mood was. So there's that feeling of being tethered, the anxiety, noticing that I felt anxious when I wasn't engaging with it, which is a bizarre, when you really think about it, that is a bizarre thing.
Yeah, well, to dig into that, I mean, is it because you thought you were missing important world events?
I don't even know. It's a sort of a nebulous feeling. A feeling of worry that I would be missing something important, you know, a sense of impending disaster if I wasn't checking all of the information all of the time, you know, and that information is coming through my emails, you know, WhatsApp.
Okay, so this isn't just social media, this is the whole thing.
Well, I don't have social media other than Twitter, X, and WhatsApp. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, I suppose I'm a
So this wasn't even a social media doom loop.
No, I think social media is somewhat of a red herring, actually, which we can get into.
Okay. For me, this is unexpected. Anyway. So this isn't about curing your Instagram addiction. This is like your feeling of needing to be available to people and reading news.
Yeah, I think I'm for me, it's addiction to information. So I think that, you know, taking a step back, I think that there's loads of sort of meaty issues that you can get into here. But I think that what I would start off with is saying that I don't think that social media is the big revolution that happened at the start of the 21st century. I think that the big revolution that happened is just the processing power being sufficiently shrunk that we can carry around an absolute ton of it in our pockets. That's the revolution. Because as soon as you have that, where everyone can carry around a massive amount of processing power cheaply, it's available, it's cheap enough that it's available to everyone, and you can just carry it around in your pocket, then that opens the door to, you know, everything that enables. And that's the actual revolution. It's nothing, you know, okay. Social media is just froth on top of the beer, you know.
Yeah.
Because I think that you can trace everything back to that, because really, you know, social media only works because everyone's got a camera. Everyone's got a, you know, this incredible kind of computer. Everyone's got, you know, it only works because you have that hardware, and it's the hardware that's in your pocket that is really actually what you're interacting with. It's the physical thing that you are really having that relationship with, and that is where the benefits and the harms come from. It's the actual thing, not the sort of, you know, nebulous things in the ether called social media. That's what I think, anyway.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I guess there's also the aspect of how you interact with it. I read somewhere, and it is struck true, that part of the addiction of smoking cigarettes is the ritual of smoking a cigarette, the action, the having the thing in your pocket, the taking it out, the lighting it, the smoking it. And that actually, if you remove that, if you have it in a as a less compelling object to interact with, the risk of nicotine addiction goes down dramatically.
Yes.
Which I'm a keen shisha smoker, and I'm confident saying I have no addiction at all, because you just can't build that routine into your life. And it's probably the same with a mobile phone compared to a desktop computer. Like, just having that thing in your pocket all the time.
Absolutely.
Makes it part of you.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah, because you can't leave it behind, or at least you stop being able to leave it behind. And it's like all compulsions, isn't it? They are physical. All compulsions are physical. It's like...
The internet is not new. We've had desktop computers plugged into broadband internet for a very long time. Exactly. But that never seemed to be a problem.
Yeah, and we've had cameras for a long time.
Yeah.
but it's the real revolution is all of that being packaged into a thing that fits in your pocket. That's the change. And yes, you're absolutely right. You develop this kind of physical compulsive behaviour with it, that I think is very physical. It's very embodied. And I think you've hit the nail on the head there. Definitely, definitely. It's like, you know, it's like prayer beads. People, you think that prayer beads, you think that religion is all about beliefs, right? Something that's going on subjectively in the mind. But actually, a lot of it isn't. A lot of it actually is physical compulsion, or, you know, physical habits. Ritual, habit, there's a spectrum, isn't there, between like ritual, compulsion, habit, addiction, you know, it's all kind of on the same spectrum, and some of it's positive and some of it's negative. That would be my first sort of insight with it. Did you know that Black Mirror was named after, Charlie on Netflix, Black Mirror?
Yeah.
The idea of the Black...
I'm aware, yeah.
Black Mirror is your phone, the Black Mirror that refers to.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, which has made me have a lot more respect for that series, because that's a really profound thing. The idea that the thing, your phone, is actually this black mirror that you spend your life staring into, and it's a reflection of you, but a sort of dark one. I think that is absolutely spot on.
Yeah, that's unpleasant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another parallel with smoking, actually. off topic a bit, but like, they're expensive.
Yeah.
You know, a good phone's a grand, and then, you know, a big, you know, decent data package to support that is 40 quid a month.
Yeah.
And you have a whole lot of people who don't earn a lot of money with these fantastically expensive phones and data packages. And it's like, that, I don't think people realize, again, like smoking, how much of their disposable income is going on this Black Mirror.
It's mad, isn't it? Absolutely. Yeah. But so I think I'm a pretty good test case for this, because I don't have social media other than WhatsApp and X. I'm going to call it X. We know what X is by now.
Yeah, one brand. Yeah.
And, you know, they are social media, absolutely 100%. They're not those kind of classic kind of mental harm kind of bogeyman of Instagram, Snapchat, you know, whatever. And so, you know, none of those things were affecting me at all because I don't have
it. It is interesting taking that off the table. I expect this to be a conversation about social media, and it's not going to be at all.
I don't think that it's social media that fundamentally engenders the compulsive negative behaviour. As I said, I think it's the hardware. I think all the software is designed to engage you in that way because that's what the hardware enables.
Mm.
So put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Yeah, I know. I currently am. Yeah.
So, go on then. Do you want to know what it's like?
Yeah, tell me what it's like. What is? It's been what, a week now?
Yeah, I think maybe a week. Yeah, a week. It's not very long. I tell you what, the overall headline is this: it's been absolutely fine. It's just been absolutely fine. The only difficulty I've had is reading my emails at work. So I've just got this thing going on at the moment with plumbing where I need to be reading emails during the day and responding to them quickly. Otherwise, plumbers will just use the excuse to not come for a month. And that's been the only difficulty. And the only reason that that's a difficulty is because I can't log on to my email at work because of the work's incredibly... I'm not going to use an adjective. Because of their system... that they use. So I've needed to bring in my smartphone, which has no SIM in it, and then also bring in some mobile Wi-Fi and hook up the two, yeah, in order to use the email. But that's the only thing. That's the only thing that I've so far come.
Yeah, and you're in a minority where your job isn't just being sat in front of a computer all day, where of course there's email if you need it.
Yeah.
This is never a problem I would have.
when I haven't been dealing with bloody plumbers on email, what I was doing is I was just coming back in at the end of the day, spending 5 minutes going through my email once at sort of 5 p.m. and then that's it.
And it was just 5 minutes, so you didn't just get back home and you're back to your old ways, scrolling through Google News.
No, not at all. Actually, not at all. Just log on, go through my email in a kind of conscious and directed way, delete everything that not needed. You know, respond to the things I did need, close it down, maybe do a bit of computer gaming. So it's not like I'm not using computers, but it's in a sort of a... Mm. It's in a way that's... I don't know, it's a big, massive cliche, isn't it? But it's like conscious, you know, a conscious way.
Intentional.
Intentional, yeah. Exactly, yeah. Thinking I'm going to play Hearts of Iron 4 now for an hour. And then it stops.
Sometimes, yeah.
Let's be honest, it doesn't stop.
Yeah. A similar issue there. So I don't have a television. Instead, I have a projector and a screen. And it means that when I'm watching television, you know, I'm choosing to watch something. You know, I'm putting up the screen, I'm putting up a projector. It's like, it's an event. Mm. And it means there's never that slump down the sofa to see what's on.
Yeah.
Instead, it's like, I want to watch this thing now.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And that's what it's like, yeah.
And you get a better experience because ultimately, Hearts of Iron 4 on a high-end gaming PC is a much richer experience than messing around your phone in the same way that watching...
Yeah. The spreadsheet works much faster on a high-end gaming PC. That's fine for, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's me watching The Mummy Returns on a big screen is also a much better experience than just on the telly.
Absolutely right. And have I missed the phone during the day when I'm working? No, I haven't even thought about it. And it was a bit like the feeling. I think I might have read this actually somewhere. I don't think this is my wording, but I agree totally with whoever wrote this that I read ages ago. That it does feel like bunking off school, not having your smartphone with you. There's a kind of
really?
Yes. There's a feeling of sort of transgression, but also freedom. Which, when you think about it, is bizarre. And I genuinely mean that. I'm not just saying that for effect. It is a feeling of transgression. It's a feeling that you are doing something slightly out... you're being a bit of an outlaw. That you're doing something a little bit dangerous. A little bit... It has a frisson of sort of danger about it. Genuinely. For me, anyway.
And that is a compelling argument for...
Exactly.
Being off grid.
I think that's exactly.
Ooh, so dangerous.
Yes. I mean, the fact that we've got to the point where it feels dangerous to me anyway, not to have this thing. I think that that really does show that we are in a negative, or at least I was in a negative relationship with that thing. You know? Because it's really not long ago that none of us had these things. You know, when we were first... When you and I were first working in London, you know, I had a BlackBerry, which wasn't really a smartphone at all.
It's not really a smartphone.
You know? And we were young adults in London, sort of just out on our own and, you know, in the big city, and we were absolutely fine. Like, it was absolutely fine, you know?
But I still had a non-smartphone there. I was a very late adopter to smartphones.
I remember. Your JCB brick.
Yeah, it was amazing. You could have it in the rain. It wouldn't break. The battery would last for a week.
You could throw it at the wall.
Yeah. Put it in a pint.
Didn't they roll a JCB digger over one of them? On the sort of the... Wasn't that the thing?
I think it was part of the pitch, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. So it wasn't long ago that we were all absolutely fine without this.
Yeah.
And yet now it feels really quite... Yeah, weird and sort of like transgressive not to have it.
Actually, at work gave me a smartphone. I never used it. It was just off in a drawer somewhere.
Good old Deloitte.
Yeah.
Progressive.
Yeah, sure.
Or at the forefront of evil, should we say. I'm joking.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, which is, yeah. Well...
it was a joke. Sarcasm. Yeah. Satire. There's still a defence for satire under the sort of legal system, isn't there?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, good satire.
Fair use.
very, very strange feeling. But I think that one of the reactions of one of the kids was really interesting.
Because, so you've told the kids?
Well, I put it out on the desk because it made a mess. Because I can't get it to stop making this massive noise every time a text comes through. I put it on silent, but it doesn't seem to work to like put the actual messages on silent. So the volume controls don't affect it. Whatever happens, it's going to make a massive noise when the text comes through. So anyway, it made a massive noise, and it's like a really retro noise, you know, like beep kind of thing. And then I kind of took it out of my pocket and I was like, we put it on the desk. And one of the kids looks at it and was like, sir, is that your phone? I was like, yeah, it's my new phone. Like, what model is that? Like, really, genuinely, this is not a joke at all. And I said, oh, it's a dumb phone. It's a dumb phone. You know, I decided to get rid of my smartphone. And she goes, why? like, genuinely, she was like, why? I said to her, I just feel it's wasting my time. And then she said something really interesting. She goes, how? So that wasn't the question that I was expecting. Because it was like she couldn't understand how being on a smartphone was a waste of time. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting. Because, of course, she's never lived in a world without smartphones, consciously.
Yeah, and you probably say that for her, unless you take a step back and think about it, those hours she'll spend on TikTok are rich and exciting. And
yeah,
you know, yeah, getting constant dopamine drip from it, and it's like, yeah,
yeah. But I wonder whether you need to have had a certain amount of experience of life without a smartphone to appreciate that a smartphone is a waste of time. I don't know.
Yeah, and that being bored is actually good because that's where creativity comes from.
Yeah. And okay, so talking about boredom, then I have had a couple of situations now where I've been sitting and think it's sort of with nothing to do.
Yeah,
and I have been bored. And I have definitely compulsively reached for my pocket I say I was doing it once every 3 or 4 minutes. So I would compulsively reach for my pocket, remember that I don't have a smartphone, and then sit there for a little bit. And then compulsively reach again after about 3 or 4 minutes.
So I asked the other day, so you know, you sat down in front of the television to watch a film, and then your wife suddenly says, oh no, I've got to go and go to the loo or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, before smartphones, what did you do for that 3 minutes where you just sat there on the sofa?
Yeah, you just sat there.
You just sat there?
Yeah. Maybe picked up a magazine or a newspaper or a book or something. Read the back cover.
Yeah, she was taking a long time, but yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, in these situations, I've been doing that. And then, but after about sort of, I don't know, 10 minutes, maybe. So I've reached for the phone sort of two or three times and remembered it's not there each time. But after about 10 minutes, I found that what happened was is that my thoughts slowed down, and that I started thinking about things in a little bit in the manner of, well, I suppose it's daydreaming, isn't it? And there's a reason it's called daydreaming. It's because it's very, very like night dreaming in the sense that you kind of have a sort of an unconscious or non-directed, I should say, flow of ideas.
Semi-directed.
Yeah, semi-directed flow of ideas that's actually very pleasant. And that was remarkable because I think it's a long time since I've really daydreamed. And it's a really interesting thing to rediscover. But
and some of my happiest moments have been daydream. I mean, a couple of years ago, actually, I was going deer stalking with my brother, and he'd gone forward to take a shot, and he was waiting for this deer to stand up. Mm. And it was just lying there for an hour until it stood up and he could shoot it. So all that time, I was 50 meters away, just sat, you know, behind a lump of grass, just looking at the view. And, yeah, just thinking, I could see a ferry below me going back and forth across a sound between two islands in the Hebrides. Mm. And I just watched it go one way, and it go the other way. And just, it's rare for me to be that happy. Mm. It's blissful. I think the mind just wandering.
I think it's particularly powerful when you're outside as well, actually. Because I think that when you're outside, this is a banal thing to say, but there's a whole world around you when you're outside. And it's a perfect stimulus.
There's a lot, yeah.
It's a perfect stimulus for daydreaming when you're outside.
Yeah.
And yet when...
It's a whole load of prompts.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so I actually find it... When I had a smartphone, I actually found it impossible to sit and get into that state because it's just the compulsion to check your phone is too strong for me.
Yeah, and you need to give yourself permission in some ways to daydream. Again, what I found, you know, sitting on this hillside in the Hebrides was that, right, I couldn't have a phone on me because we were stalking. Mm. And actually, for that hour, there was nothing better I could be doing than just sitting there in silence. And it's like I was actually doing the right thing at that time. I was doing the most virtuous thing I could do for an hour. You just have to be sitting still doing nothing. And it's rare, I think, for that to be the case. You always think, oh, I could be doing something more valuable with this time. And the problem is then your brain reaches straight for the phone and that's not actually more valuable. Quite the opposite most of the time.
I 100% agree with that. I think, again, you've really hit the nail on the head there of what's actually going on. Because it is about, you're absolutely right, it's that guilt of thinking I should be doing something more useful right now.
Yeah.
But what's really interesting is that guilt kicks in and you think I should be doing something more useful right now. So you open your phone and you check, I don't know, you check your email. But then what happens, once you've checked your email and you realise there's absolutely nothing worthwhile going on there, like some companies have sent you some marketing emails, like that's all that's happened. Then what happens is you start just compulsively consuming information. So you just kind of swipe right and you look at the sort of the Google news feed. That's what I do anyway.
Yeah, you know my views on news. I think even a newspaper is in the same category where you think you're doing something useful and valuable and getting important information and actually it's just completely useless.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. That's what I would end up doing. What that does then is it anesthetizes. It's like an anesthetic effect where you are...
That's exactly what it is,
You are prevented from thinking. And that anesthesia is sort of in the moment quite nice in a way because it blanks your mind. And, you know, you might be worried about things. You might be a bit stressed about work. You might have some bloody plumbing disaster unfolding in slow motion. And you're kind of stressed about it. But that sort of engagement with the phone provides this kind of anesthesia, which is nice in a way.
Well, hours can pass and it's fine. But then it's afterwards and you're like, what the hell have I just done with my evening?
And you're still stressed because you haven't processed anything. Nothing has moved forward. Nothing has changed. You've just lost 2 hours. And yes, you weren't worried for those 2 hours, or at least you weren't. It wasn't in the forefront of your mind, but nothing has actually happened to that underlying stress or anxiety. Whereas if you daydream, I'm not saying that you'll always end up, you know, feeling as happy as Larry afterwards, but you do have this sense of movement, at least, in your mind. You know, you are no longer in the same state of mind that you were 20 minutes ago. And you might still be feeling you might still be feeling pretty rubbish, but you have at least, there's been some movement, at least, which is a very different feeling.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, going back into like kids' mental health, I think it is absolutely, anybody who's sitting there saying, oh, well, you know, we don't have all the data yet about causation. It's like, oh, yes, there's lots of correlation, but we don't yet have the hard data on causation. I just think, come on. Like, yeah, okay, that is technically true, but you didn't have hard data on the causation of, like, radium, you know, melting your face for sort of a period of time, did you? And it was in, like, rejuvenating skin cream. And, like, there was a period of time where you didn't have that technical hard data. So, you know, if you think that's a good reason to go and put, like, thorium or plutonium on your face, then go ahead. You know? I just think that argument is absolutely absurd. There is absolutely a very reasonable case, given the potential harms involved, to say at this point we've got enough information to think that, for it to be a totally reasonable thing to think that it's pretty certain that is.
Yeah, and what are the harms as you see them?
Well, I think that for younger people, that is where the relentless effect on their mood in a formative period does then translate into actual mental health. I think for people like you and me, you know, who grew up without this crap, it's more about mood, because we developed our sort of personalities and sort of psyche in a pre
I was already me by the time I got a smartphone.
Exactly. Whereas you know, that's not happening for them, and it's a They lack perspective. They lack perspective because their perspective is constantly warped by the fact that the world is being transmitted to them through this thing in their pocket. And it distorts absolutely every experience of the world that they have. Almost every experience of the world that they have. I mean, I think that in the classroom, you know, they're not allowed their phones. I think that still is a sort of an unfiltered experience, more or less, but that's it.
Yeah. Well, they've all got laptops these days.
Not a good but yeah. You have to let that out because you can't know that.
Yeah, you've docked yourself there. Yeah.
But yeah, so, but they're coming in. But I actually don't think that laptops are a problem. Going back to that initial thing.
Yeah, it's about it can't be compulsive.
Yes. Laptops are kind of bounded in space and time because they're inconvenient. Yeah. You have to open them. You have to, you know, they're not always there, always available.
Yeah.
There's a boundary.
It's interesting how you say the worst thing about smartphones for kids is that perspective thing. Because, again, it's spending rather less time around children than you do. To me, it's about lost opportunities for development. It's not being bored, so not having to create your own fun, not having to learn independently, but also not having that time that you then spend learning new skills yourself.
It's ironic, isn't it? Because I know exactly what you mean. Sorry, I've interrupted you. Go on, finish your sentence. Sorry.
I mean, it was basically that, to be honest. But if you know, start getting good at anything, you're going to be grinding some pretty tedious tasks for the first couple of years, whether that's a musical instrument or a language or woodworking, or you know, it's a while before you get the dopamine. And if you have an easy easy source of rather more dopamine in the short term, you're probably going to neglect the building the foundations of greater satisfaction in the long term.
Yeah. I totally get where you're coming from. But actually, what you see in the modern world is parents are even incredibly anxious to make sure that their children are always doing things. So kids these days are always out on sort of, they're doing music lessons, they're doing sports, they're doing, you know, these camps, D of E, like CCF, it never stops. Some of them literally have no time to themselves at all. They spend the entire time learning skills and having experiences, at least on, you know, in one respect.
Okay, so I've misdiagnosed slightly there.
I think slightly.
So, you know, what is it about being bored?
It's,
I just think it's so powerful, but it's hard to do a direct cause and effect of...
yeah, so I don't think that kids are definitely, or at least a lot of kids, are still having way more kind of exciting experiences than even you or I would have had maybe at school.
Mm.
But they are not reaping the full benefit of it, in my view, because ultimately the smartphones they worm their way in into everything.
Yeah, Duke of Edinburgh with the smartphone would be a very different experience, wouldn't
it? I think they have their smartphones taken away from them from the Duke of Edinburgh. So that is a kind of a... I think that does actually do something, because they do come back from that and looking like they've had an experience. But I think that my point is that, you know, normally... back in the day, you'd have that experience, then you'd come back and you'd be daydreaming about it when you were bored. You know, you'd be processing it in a different way, whereas you come back now
and integrating it.
You're immediately on the phone telling people about it, you know. It's sort of sharing it in your, so your processing of the experience then goes through, is distorted by the phone, I think, is what I would, in that concrete
it's interesting
instance, say is happening.
Interesting how much the language there is in common with discussions around psychedelic use, where after having a psychedelic experience, I'm told you're supposed to set aside the time to integrate it. And to not suddenly go off and do something else.
Yeah, all that research says that, yeah, doesn't it? If you read the Michael Pollan book, yeah.
Yeah. And as important as the experience itself is the time afterwards thinking about it and integrating it into your new self.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
But it's interesting that that's the case with psychedelics, so I've read, but also with like real, you know, real world experiences. You don't get the full value of a Duke of Edinburgh expedition unless you have some time afterwards to think about it.
Well, what I would say is that, you know, certainly a lot of human cultures have in the past seemed to engender similar out-of-body or transcendental experiences through physical suffering. So I'm thinking of the, the sun dance in Native American culture, where they used to put sort of pins underneath their pectoral muscles, and they were tied by these pins to a pole, and they had to dance around it, and they had to do this for sort of 24 hours. And, you know, if you did this well, then you would have a sort of an out-of-body religious experience, what we would call a religious experience. And you would get there through, you know, just suffering, and you'd get to the same place that, you know, a kind of shamanic psychedelic session would take you. Through physical suffering. So I'd say that, you know, the boundary between the way that you get to these experiences, there are lots of different routes to these experiences, and that actually a D of E expedition where you have a bit of suffering, I would say, is, you know, you are in the foothills of that kind of experience, because it's it's a transformative experience. It changes, you know, you are subjectively affected by that, your mind is affected by the suffering or whatever that you're going through, and it might be a very mild effect, but it's still happening. It's still there. The same thing. Yeah. But I think that smartphones, what they do is they somehow they worm themselves into that loop, in the body and in the mind, and they distort it and they stop it. They make it misfire in some way.
Mm.
Is what I think is happening. And that's obviously very bad. it's very, very bad.
Yeah.
Very bad. You think about that for an idea?
Yeah, well, it's very bad. However, you are not a teenager.
No.
and this is about you giving up your your smartphone.
Yeah. So actually...
But do you think the same effect happens to you?
Yes.
Where you go ahead and do something real and you come back and... Okay.
Yes. 100%. Yeah. I think the effect is probably less on me than it would be on a teenager because, you know, I'm more set in my ways. You know, my ego has a kind of a firmer boundary, to use kind of psychobabble talk. You know, there is... it's sort of... You know, the boundaries of myself are pretty well established, you know.
Yeah.
Because I'm so old. But so it will have less of an effect on me, but I think that, yeah, definitely does have an effect. Definitely. I'm trying to think of a good example. If I've done anything interesting recently. Well, okay, so... went camping to Pembrokeshire, went surfing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, very elemental experience, very physical mm-hmm. experience. Really enjoyed it.
Especially in Welsh water temperatures.
Yeah. I actually found that the main way that I was reflecting on that was by looking at photos that had been taken by on the phone.
And that's interesting.
And what, you know, it's that pleasure of like, oh, looking at the photo, because then it's like, oh, great, I got a good photo of me in a wetsuit or whatever. And you kind of get drawn into that. You think, and that then becomes the defining sort of image of memory of the event.
Yeah, and third person.
Yeah.
Quite small.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it stops the.
Purely visual.
Yeah. And it stops the defining memory of the event being the kind of, you know, being tumbled about like a rag doll in the surf. Which, you know, was type 2 fun, but nevertheless, probably a more profound bit of the experience. Another really interesting thing, I was speaking to a colleague and she was saying that the thing that she objects to about smartphones is that they stop you using language to describe memories to people. So what happens is that you have a great experience, you take a picture of whatever that is, and then you, in order to communicate it to a friend, you just show it to them. You just show them this photo, right?
Oh, that's very interesting.
But what happens is that strips it completely of the actual subjective element. And what we actually care about as human beings when someone's telling us about something is the subjective element. You know, what did it mean to you? That's the bit that's actually interesting. And she was saying that it really annoys her how that is being stripped out of culture.
I hadn't thought about that at all.
I know, right? I know, yeah.
Yeah, because there's a whole lot that goes into that, because to be able to describe something and how it felt, you've got to have processed it.
Yeah.
It's got to have been integrated.
Yeah. Because when you describe it, that's actually a slightly different thing to living it. Right? So, yes, what you choose to...
All the selection of detail.
So what you choose to communicate about
The narrative.
Is actually a very subtle but profound process, I think.
Because, the same photo could be a whole range of different experiences depending on who you are and your mindset.
Yeah, you take a photo of, like, 20 swans on a river. One person, it's like, oh, how beautiful. Another person who's been, like, attacked by a swan. It's like... terrifying. And what's interesting is which one you are. Are you the person who loves swans, or were you attacked by a swan? You know, what was this experience like?
And then you have the awkward fact that any photo you take will have been taken, unless you're doing something very unusual, thousands of times before. This is my objection to taking photos on a holiday or at any event, but certainly on holiday. It's like, you go and see Trajan's Column. I don't need to take a photo of that. If I want to see a photo of Trajan's Column, I'm one Google away.
I'm glad you chose a classical monument there. Very good.
Well, I saw it with you, didn't I?
Probably. No, because we were in Siena.
We went to Rome.
Did we?
Yeah.
Oh, I've forgotten that. But
not for long.
I must have a smartphone getting in my loop. Yeah, I've forgotten that. But I actually think that you take really, really good photos. But the point is, you don't take them with a phone.
Part of my slightly anachronistic DSLR thing is that, you're having to actually think about it if you're taking a photo.
Exactly.
You're committing to it.
You are committing to it. You're thinking about it. You're doing it. It's a bounded activity. You have to have consciously brought the camera with you, and you have to be thinking about, right, I'm taking a photo. You're thinking about the... You're not thinking, it's not a mode, it's a different mode of communication, isn't it? You're not just trying to substitute it for words.
Yeah.
You are creating a thing in itself, a piece of art in itself when you're doing that. And that's
exactly.
That's totally,
and there's a whole
lot
of other stuff. Yeah.
Sorry.
And there's all the technical knowledge to actually you use a proper camera. Whilst the, you know, on an iPhone, you can just point and shoot. Mm. It doesn't play out like that with a proper camera. So there's that. Do you read that on the new Samsung phones? It's got a moon mode where you can take a photo of the moon. You can zoom in really close, and it just takes these incredible photos of the moon. And then someone realized that what they're doing is using AI to just put a stock photo of the moon where the moon is. And so you get these incredible moon shots, but it's not actually what you're taking.
I mean, that is...
I found that quite bleak.
It's so bleak, isn't it? And it's the perfect...
But also telling.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's also like those adverts for those Google phones where it's like you can jump off a sort of a chair towards a basketball hoop, and then you can just magically erase the chair, and then you have a great photo. And it looks like you're flying through the air, and you know, on this advert, everyone's like high fiving themselves, and you know, isn't this amazing? It's like, no, that's just really lame because you didn't actually do it. You know, am I just old now that I think that this is absolutely atrociously sad? That's it, maybe.
Yeah, well, then you get the whole extra layer of basically telling lies to a camera that you're having, you know, a great time.
Yes, but that's exactly what was remarkable about it. It was like Google was advertising its ability to make you take more to tell more convincing lies. That was what it was advertising
to make it look like you're more cool than you are,
I just couldn't believe it. I
was having more fun than you are.
And I was like, am I the only person that thinks that this is incredibly just utterly horror, like, yeah, bleak. It's bleak. You're right. Bleak is the word. Anyway, so, yeah, a lot of ranting about smartphones there, but I think that in that I nearly got to an interesting point. You've been hitting all the nails on the head, but I think it's something to do with the friction, right? It's something to do with the fact that, you know, with a phone, everything is frictionless. And that's not a good thing because it means that it's not intentional, it's not conscious. So as you were saying, like with the camera, you've got to have that craft, you've got to have that knowledge and understanding of the camera you're using with a DSLR. But with an iPhone, you don't. It's just frictionless. You just take it out of your pocket, two clicks, done. No thought has gone into it, which means that no subjectivity or anything like that has gone into it. It's just a kind of a... It's almost like the smartphone is doing what you should be doing for you. And it's almost taking you out of the process. And that's kind of the problem. It's smartphones, they're always suppressing you. So
it's a subtle point because at the same time, automating routine or mechanical tasks, I think, is an unalloyed good. Mm. But the question is, at what point are you filing off the edges? Are you automating a source that ought to be creativity, where you're having these decisions automatically made for you in a lowest common denominator kind of way? And there's some part of the process that is actually important from a creativity point of view or from a being you point of view.
Well, I would ask, why is it an unalloyed good to mechanize menial tasks? It's so that you have more time to do the things that matter. That's why that's an unalloyed good. But what a smartphone is doing is it's mechanizing the things that matter.
Oh, so it's rather like the AI thing where everyone thought that AI would take on the menial tasks and instead, you know, leaving us all with more time to do art and poetry, whilst actually AI is doing the art and poetry.
Yeah. Leaving you to your accountancy. I think that there is something in that. I think that smartphones are automating and taking you out of the things that actually you want to be in because they're valuable.
That's deep. I have a counter argument.
Go on.
So from how the brain works, if you use a tool and if you use it well and a lot, your brain starts to model it as an extension of your body.
Yeah, extended condition.
Yeah. Mm. And so you could say the same probably happens with a phone, where actually you end up with the internet being an extended part of your body or brain even. Mm. And it's almost like the internet becomes a kind of higher level above I don't know the brain terms here, but we've got the kind of brain stem, and then we've got our frontal cortex as a sort of high level on top of that. Mm. And you can say that by having
got a few layers in between
an extension. Yeah, probably. By making the phone an extension of your brain, and therefore by making the phone an extension of your body, and therefore the internet an extension of your brain. Could you not say that you're actually increasing your brain power or adding higher order functionality to it? Like, and you can, there's a limit to the brain's memory ability, but the internet, can store a lot of information for you, and so you just pass stuff off to machines which are better at some stuff.
There's a book that we've both read.
And that's actually a good thing.
Yeah, this is my answer to this. There's a book that we've both read called Blindsight. In this book, the underlying thesis that is terrifyingly unfolded through a sort of fictional story is the idea that actually consciousness is not the ultimate adaptive mental facet. That actually it is far more adaptive to be unconscious but fast. And that if your ability to gather information and deploy that information, process and then deploy that information is faster, you are better adapted. And the way to get it faster is to take consciousness, which is slow, out of the loop. The terrifying, eventuality that is unfolded is that humans who are conscious are completely outcompeted by these non-conscious biological entities who are utterly terrifying in their speed and processing ability. And I would say that what that story illustrates is that you may be absolutely right that it is, it is in a sense a higher order of function to have the internet as part of your extended cognition. But I would argue that the way that it is getting you to function more highly or more adaptively in one respect is by suppressing the things that we actually value.
Oof.
Which is our individuality.
So your rejection of the smartphone is actually a rejection of the forces trying to reduce our consciousness.
Yeah, I'm like a dodo fighting back.
So when Elon Musk always likes to say that his ambition is for consciousness to be expanded as far as possible into the stars, and that what he wants is more consciousness. But actually, if we say that Neuralink is kind of the next evolution of phones, where instead of being in your pocket, it's in your brain, and so it's an even more frictionless version of the same thing. Mm. What he's actually doing is suppressing consciousness rather than expanding it. Because the human in the middle of this whole thing, between your limbic system and the internet, which is where our consciousness lives, probably that's becoming diminished.
But it's a possibility. I think it is more likely to do that than it is to expand our consciousness in some sense. I mean, just think about this, right? Think about having push notifications happening in your head. That's what terrifies me about Neuralink. I mean, who's paying for it? People are going to want to advertise. How do you make it economical? But you're going to have people wanting to advertise on Neuralink, which means that they'll be advertising inside your brain. And if that doesn't give you pause for thought, nothing will.
although the way we're going, it's like, we won't have anything to advertise to, really, because the consciousness...
You can still be a decision-making entity. If anything, you can be a more rational economic actor if you're not conscious.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, more efficient.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Elon Musk is sincere about his objectives. I think that he's working very hard to achieve them. But no one man has the answer to everything. And I think that I obviously would think this, but I think that my perspective is relevant here. I think that you would do well to take notice, Elon, if you're listening. Please take note.
I thought this discussion was going to be about social media, and instead it's a much more terrifying discussion about how smartphones are removing our consciousness and making us live less conscious lives.
Yeah. That is what I think, though.
Yeah, but I mean, that is a much, much stronger argument for getting rid of them than any you've presented before.
Yeah. Well, I've had plenty of time to think about it, because I haven't had my phone.
Yeah, true.
But I tell you what, though, to bring it back to a slightly more mundane level, the real reason why the spur is actually my daughter, that... I realised that I was spending a lot of time on the phone around her. And I don't... There's two things to that. First of all, that's bad in itself. I shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't want to be... You don't want your own child, who's, like, nearly two, to be thinking that you care about this strange black mirror more than you care about them. So that's one.
Mm.
But then also, you know, I'm already terrified of the day when she turns, I don't know, eight... And she starts asking for a smartphone. And I think it will be a lot easier to say no if I don't have one.
If you normalise not having one.
Yeah. It's not far away. It's only 6 years away that she was going to start asking. So, yeah. That was the spur.
Really. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's gone deep.
Yeah. And I think I think that, you know, I was reading this study that said that, you know, when you actually control for a load of things, it looks like social media use doesn't cause, you know, mental health problems. And obviously they were looking at teenagers using social media. That's what they were looking at, which I think misses the point, as I hope I've explained. But nevertheless.
Yeah.
And I just thought, right, okay, but... You're only looking at a very, very small slice of the problem there, because it could still be social media that's causing them to have poor mental health. But what if it's not them using social media? What if it's their parents?
Mm.
Because parental attention is obviously absolutely crucial for mental health. But if parental attention is being diverted at crucial stages of their life, then actually that could be the way that it's doing it. Rather than them using
it. Yeah. And that's a more recent cohort, but still.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're probably...
I think that...
Coming through now, yeah.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I think that there's an interconnected and very complex web of harmful things that are happening. And they're happening so quickly and so pervasively that it's actually quite hard to see what they are. You know, it's difficult to see the wood for the trees because there are now so many trees. I do think that.
So,
but what I would say,
get rid of your smartphone.
Yeah, get rid of your smartphone, but don't necessarily buy the cheapest Nokia drug dealer phone because it's very difficult to use.
Well, that's the thing, because it's something I thought of, and the problem is not having WhatsApp is friction. And not having Google Maps is inconvenient.
Oh, you could use WhatsApp on the laptop, though. You said to me before we started recording, how come I'm still getting so many WhatsApps? I'm doing them all on my laptop.
Okay.
So I log onto my laptop, I open WhatsApp, and it's actually quite fun. It's like being on MSN again. Shout out to old people.
Yeah, and you're being intentional. And also you type a lot faster on a computer.
Yeah. And I don't think that actually... I think that it would be perfectly possible for us to send to each other just as many messages on WhatsApp.
It doesn't have to be synchronous.
It's
okay to batch process and not have to demand that everyone's present all the time.
Exactly. It's batch processing. You're exactly right. Yeah.
And then you thought about the messages a bit more as well.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't with you, but one could theoretically.
Well, one could. We're not quite returning to the... 19th century, yeah. Republic of Letters.
I also think that phoning your friends is much healthier, actually, than WhatsApping them. I mean, I'm still not really there with most of my friends in terms of phoning them. But I phone a few, and obviously we have these chats, which is nice. But, you know, the few that I do phone, like I phone occasionally, and it's much nicer than WhatsApping.
I phoned my brother the other day, and he picked up terrified because he thought that someone had died. Because why else would I phone him? I needed a password, I think. But
nice.
genuinely terrified.
Yeah. Yeah. But of course, it's not scary at all, someone phoning you. It's nice. It's only scary. So, I mean, how ridiculous is it that we're now scared of our own family and friends phoning us? It's ridiculous.
I just want to do it when I'm in the brain space. I don't want my attention demanded.
Yeah, I know, but that's a harmful mental quirk that's developed as well, isn't it? The idea that we should always be in control of, you know, our own little bubble of space. I'm very, very, very guilty of that.
You're an excellent housemate.
But, you know, actually, it's much healthier for us to be slightly more laissez-faire.
Yeah, and have just more slack in your day so you do have time to have a call every now and then.
Yeah, exactly.
It's probably a separate conversation to have, though. Stick to smartphones.
Do you have any... I mean, I think that I've vented most of the things that I was planning to vent there. Do you have any final questions for the... Is this sort of a... I don't know, an investigative journalist, something? You know, you're like Louis Theroux talking to one of those weirdos in the middle of America.
I don't know. The problem is you've presented such a compelling case. It's quite funny. On some levels, it does sound a bit hippie that this is about elevating your consciousness and being more present. Yeah, it's funny that it's come around to that. So now it's just about problem solving. Okay, how would I live without a smartphone? Because as well as all the bad stuff, like I need it for my job.
Well, you can still... Okay, so I still own a smartphone, right? To full disclosure.
Yeah.
I mean, there's quite a disclosure to make it 1 hour into this. But the point is that it's not what I'm carrying about with me. So I still have it at home, and it still works with the internet. So if I need an authenticator, or I need the phone for a QR code or whatever, I can still just go over to the drawer and get it out and do it.
Yeah, well, you still have it in your briefcase, just not in your pocket.
Yeah, exactly. So it becomes intentional rather than frictionless, which is the harm.
Yeah, so that way you could even maybe get some of the benefits of a smartphone, which are considerable.
It's just becomes a very small, easy-to-use laptop.
Yeah. Maybe I should replace it with an iPad.
No. No.
No.
No. Well, there you go. There's my thoughts.
Yep, compelling. I'm actually quite shaken by that conversation.
Wow, success. I think that there's something that you said in my in the speech you made at my wedding as your best man speech. You said that I do conventional things in unconventional ways. And I've always thought about that. I was like, oh God, he's really nailed that. That is absolutely right. I didn't. It's one of those moments of self-revelation where you're like, oh my God, he's right. but I'm not quite sure what the conventional thing I'm doing here is. I think I'm doing something unconventional, as is my wont.
No, you're definitely being transgressive here.
Yeah,
unambiguously. So well done.
Thank you. But
you got there.
I've no doubt that it will turn out to be some kind of conventional thing in the end. Don't worry.
Well, just when everyone else joins you.
Maybe. Well, there you go. Perhaps we can do another check-in with how it's going in maybe a month or so.
And, we should.
Yeah.
See if you stuck with it.
See if I've stuck with it, yeah.
See if your consciousness has expanded.
Yeah.
Will I even be able to communicate with you anymore?
We won't even know what we're talking about. We'll be talking about different languages.
We'll be on different planes, experiencing different worlds.
Yeah. Cool.
That's funny because it's true. Yeah.
Cool. Well, until then.
Until then.
Adieu.